From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm gonna tell you what you need
to know. Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. Our need to know brought to you by Jungle Law. Experiencing a rumble in the legal jungle? Call the lawman at Jungle Law. If you have a criminal charge pending, call him right away. The firm also does employment-related issues against corporations. Call Jungle Law for a free consultation. Tell me, the top 25 is out. The coaches' top 25 is out. And the Big 12, are they represented fairly in this? Oklahoma at 9, Baylor at 10, Oklahoma State at 11. The Longhorns check in at 18. Is that enough for your Big 12 liking? It should be pointed out Cincinnati is at 22, Houston is at 25. And the others receiving votes, if you were to count on down, BYU would be 29. It would be 32 for Central Florida. So top 32 for all four, from 22 to 32 for all four of the new additions that are coming to the Big 12. So they're in there and certainly going to strengthen the conference based upon what this says, being that they're ranked ahead of a number of the Big 12 schools. K-State, only 4 votes. Iowa State, 3 votes. So they got some consideration, but not much. Am I the only one that thinks that K-State has more coming back with a coach that's proven that he can get it done, that they're kind of being overlooked? And Iowa State ought to be at a point now where you just expect them to be a top 25 team. Am I the only one that thinks both those schools kind of got slapped in the face with the top 25, the coaches' polls?
Yeah, I don't know that I would have expected K-State to be up around the 25, but I think they would have been higher in the others receiving votes. I would have expected them to at least be in double digits, or maybe 20, 25 votes, but 4? And Iowa State, 7, the two schools combined, is stunning to me.
Kansas State will appear in the top 25 this year.
I believe you're right.
If they're going to be a top 25 team later, they're a top 25 team now.
Mm-hmm. I don't get
that
at all.
I don't get that one. Now, listen, the answer would be, okay, if you're going to put them up there, who are you taking out? I can't tell you I've done enough research right now to do that, but I do think K-State has slided. Things that jump out at me, Alabama 1, Ohio State 2, Georgia 3, Clemson 4, Notre Dame 5. Are we at a point that Georgia can lose as much talent as they did, and we're just ready to go ahead and lock them in at number 3?
Voters seem to think so. I don't think they've proven. I don't think they have that track record yet. I don't think they're where Alabama was a year ago. Alabama backed up their massive season and then lost everyone. They were back in it the next year. Georgia doesn't have that experience yet.
We'll find out right away. They open with number 12, Oregon, so we're going to get an answer to that pretty darn quick. And, of course, then they have nothing else of note on the non-con. Samford, Kent State, and later on Georgia Tech in their rivalry game. That's it for the non-con. So Oregon's going to be the one team outside the SEC that has a chance to get something done. And then the other team that I think, everybody knows I'm a big fan of Jim Harbaugh, but I'm not sure that Michigan deserves the spot that they're getting. Up this high. They're going to win early. Colorado mm-hmm. State, Hawaii, Connecticut, Maryland, before they go to Iowa. Those are all winnable games for them. But number 6 seems a little bit lofty to me.
Does, at least by 3 or 4 spots. I have to look back and see what the preseason coaches' polls have been in the past. It's an odd grouping for the Big 12 to have nobody in the top 8 and then bing, bang, bong, 3 straight. I mean, it would suggest what should be a pretty fun race in the Big 12 this year. Really no clear favorite, but I'm not quite sure I've seen that at least any time recently.
Yeah. SEC schools for the Missouri fans. Alabama's 1, Georgia's 3, Texas A&M is 7, Next up from the SEC would be Kentucky.
Wow.
At 21, Arkansas 23, Ole Miss at 24. Others receiving votes, Tennessee would be the equivalent of 28. LSU would be 30, Auburn 31. Mississippi State's in the 30-somethings, followed by Florida. They're also receiving votes. South Carolina got 5. And I know there's a lot of love for the South Carolina coach, but I don't think there should be any more for South Carolina than there is K-State. There's only one more vote, 5-4. What's the difference? But I think K-State's – I think they're a dark horse. I mean, you want to – like, who could come from off the pack? K-State's as good a team on there. A lot depends on Adrian Martinez, but if you wanted to say, we haven't had a team yet, there's only 10 or 12 teams that can win a championship, there's all these different metrics, and I do believe that that's the case. But if you wanted a team to say, all right, who am I going to take a flyer on as a long shot, even though no long shot ever comes through, I think K-State's as good a long shot bet as you can get.
Yeah. The only real bad news they've gotten the last week was Dylan Edwards pulling back his commitment, and maybe he isn't going to go to K-State, but he wasn't going to make a major impact this year anyway. I don't think he'd be a nice additional back, but they've got their guy in that at that position. So I think you're right. At some point they're going to be 25 or higher, and if that's the case, he probably should be where they are. I'm okay with them not being in this list. I would like to have been to see them in the first 5 or 6 teams getting votes, though.
Go ahead, Adam.
Well, I was just the season I look at with K-State, and obviously Bill Snyder is a Hall of Famer, and we'll see what Klieman does. But 2011, coming into that year, they had made a bowl team. Now, last year won 8 games. In 2010, I think they only won 6. But it was a bowl team coming into 2011, unranked, maybe receiving votes to start the year. They had ahead of them in the Big 12 a national title contender in Oklahoma State. And I think Oklahoma got him pretty good. But that year was somewhat similar in the Big 12 in that you can't just pick – this one's definitively ahead of the pack. And it looks like not only does K-State look good, this conference looks like the classic kind of year where K-State jumps up ahead of, you know, maybe in a lot of years they're good enough to win 8 games. But because of the conference around them, they could go up to 10 or 11 wins.
Yeah. All right. Cale Gundy story, which we just had in the Sports Center. Am I the only one? Like, I don't, you know, I understand when you're, you know, you want to come forward and like, oh, you know, I throw myself on the mercy of the court type of thing. You know, I want to be very clear. The words I read aloud from the screen were not my words. What I said was not malicious. It wasn't even intentional. He said that in the moment he did not even realize what he was reading. As soon as he did, I was horrified. As soon as he did, he was horrified. Yet up here it says, Coach Gundy resigned from the program because he knows what he did was wrong, Venable said. He chose to read aloud to his players not once but multiple times a racially charged word that is objectionable to everyone and does not reflect the attitude and values of our university or our football program. This is not acceptable, period. Coach Gundy did the right thing in resigning. He knows our goals for excellence, and the coaches have special responsibilities to set an example. I mean, like, oh, you know, I'm resigning. I didn't even know, but I really didn't do anything wrong. You read it multiple times.
That's the new part. That's the part that wasn't in the story yesterday, I think, or at least when it first popped, that he had. Now, if you're reading something aloud and you hit that word and you go, whoa, that's it, that I don't think is a resignable offense. The fact that he read it multiple times, that changes to me everything about that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You can't. It's, you can't. If you slip up, so I was just reading this thing. Now, I think in that moment when reading something aloud, when I saw that word, I would have stopped. I wouldn't have said it the first time. And then was he surprised that it came out? Oh, wow, who said that? Oh, it was me? That's a little difficult to believe. But the multiple times thing, once you say it and you realize, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I just said that. Let me say it 2 or 3 more times.
Yeah.
So that's not good.
Not buying it. Not buying it at all. All right, Kansas City Chiefs still firing away, waiting for their first training camp or first preseason game coming up this Saturday. The offensive line, everybody feels very good about the offensive line. Can it be even better? That was one of the subjects that was brought up today. Creed Humphrey, a guy that we're going to talk about here very shortly because his grades are absolutely fantastic when you hear Amelia Probst and her breakdown of it. He's one of the best offensive linemen in football. Andy Reid, talking about Creed Humphrey today, said year two will be big for Creed.
Yeah, so I think Creed's, I would tell you, Creed's challenge is this year, you know, that he was a newcomer last year. Now all these coaches have had a chance to study him for an offseason, and, you know, they'll try to throw him some different pitches in there. So how he handles that will be important. You don't, you know, he played well last year and was one of the best, but, you know, these coaches get creative. They're going to challenge you. So the work that he's put in and he's putting in now is so important.
I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to be even better. I'm not worried about them like, oh, when do they throw the changeup first? It's a physical sport. The man's physically dominating. Like, what are they going to do? Stand up?
Line up backwards and run the other direction. I have no idea.
I think Andy Reid knows he's got a stud, and he just doesn't want to put too much pressure on him. That's mm-hmm. what I think.
Or wants to make sure Humphrey doesn't get a big head about last year and plays, you know, continues to try to maybe I'm going to be ready for everything that comes at me because that's what they're going to do. I'm sure they've given him that, but I don't have any real fears. I think they've found a guy who's going to be an all-pro.
I do too. Year after
multiple
year after
times.
Year.
Yes.
We'll let you decide if he's got a big head. Creed Humphrey, happy to have veterans around him as he gets set for the challenges that come with year two.
Yeah, you know, it's nice having guys like, you know, Joe, Orlando, Andrew on the line, you know, that have been in that position, you know, that have came in that second year, have done that second year. So it's been nice to talk to them about it and everything. For me, it's really just I'm continuing to focus on my game and, you know, try to get my weaknesses better and my strengths better. So really that's what I'm focused on right now in camp is improving how I play the game.
Sounds like a guy humble going back to work. I mean, yeah. Your typical offensive line, that they're not wide receivers in how they handle themselves.
No, and he was a little bit more. I remember last year he didn't say much at all. And this year he didn't say a whole lot today, but he seemed like he was a little more at ease with that process than he was a year ago. So he's kind of settling into that spot. It's to watch the weekly, you know, clips, the GIFs, as you see on Twitter. And it isn't just the people who cover the Chiefs. It's other people that you see on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. Hey, how about this Creed Humphrey block? Well, how about this that Creed Humphrey did? It's kind of cool to see that all over the place. And sitting alongside someone like Trey Smith, who's seen a few of those certainly himself, but That's a pretty damn good second-round pick right there.
Yeah, it's a great second-round pick. Chris Jones goes against him all the time in practice. He said Humphrey's already one of the best in the NFL.
If you look at his grade, he should have been an all-pro last year. You know, they snubbed him from that. Snubbed him from his first Pro Bowl. But, hey, keep on chopping. Keep on chopping. And the assists, it will come over time. Those guys are Dell front for five guys. They're relentless now. They're relentless. They're good. Doing a really good job of protecting Pat. And that's what we need. We're able to compete every day, challenge each other. And it's good when you have that type of talent on the offensive line because it makes guys around them better, especially the D-line. We're able to compete at a high level day in, day out.
And you get to go against him a couple of times in the one-on-ones and full passing. How strong is this guy?
Well, I haven't went against him. I try to stay far away from the nose spot as possible. But no, I'm just kidding. I've seen a lot of great competitive battles, especially one-on-one. You know, that's when a mano against a mano. Am I better than you? So there's been a lot of competitive battles.
I stay away from him.
Those are the ones you pay for, right? If you if you're watching the position groups and you get a chance to see Chris Jones against Creed Humphrey, oof, that's best on best.
Yep.
Right. That's what you want to see. You want to see those two go at it. The offensive line as a whole, obviously bringing everybody back. Competition certainly over there at the right tackle side. But Humphrey talking today said he likes how the offensive line looks at the end of the first week of camp.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's been very competitive these past couple of weeks. You know, we've had some hot days, you know, really humid hot days. Been, you know, everybody's been pretty moist out there. just getting after it though and competing every play. So it's been really good. You know, you kind of see the mental toughness of what we have in the group and, you know, what the defensive line has in the group. So it's been really fun to see. And, you know, we have some very talented guys who are also, you know, in love with the game. You know, they want to continue to be great and become better. So it's always a good thing when you have that in the room.
Can't help but be better as far as I'm concerned. Second year that Orlando Brown goes into a passing offense as the left tackle, and he's in camp for almost the whole thing. Should be able to catch up whatever he missed in mini camp. Second year for Creed Humphrey, no rookie wall this time. Same thing for Trey Smith. Joe Tooney still in the prime of his career for offensive lineman. And you're going to at least have Andrew Wiley back. You know, at best, somebody beats him, and they're better than Andrew Wiley. The offensive line's got to be just as good or better, would be my thoughts on this. I mean, I don't I don't know how it could be anything else. Let's get Pat in here. I want to hear this, and then we can talk a little bit more about it. But again, Patrick Mahomes on NFL Network today asked how much more confident he is in this offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, it's super exciting. I mean, when you come into last year, you saw the talent, but you don't know when they haven't been together. Exactly. You don't know what you're going to get out of it. And they stepped up. I mean, to their credit, by the end of the year, they're one of, if not the best offensive line in football. Mm-hmm. And so to have those guys coming back, getting Orlando back in here, kind of that leader of the group, I'm excited for their evolution, them to get even better. Whenever you have a great offensive line, it usually makes the offense look good. So I'm glad we have a great one.
Yeah, Creed Humphrey, yeah, man, what a year he had. He's the highest rated center in the league.
Yeah, he's built like a refrigerator. Yeah. It's the craziest thing. You go in there and you watch him lifting, and he's like bench pressing like 475, just repping it out. He's squatting. He's built like a fridge. And then Trey Smith, Joe Tooney. We have a lot of guys battling. Andrew Wiley, Lucas Niang, Christensen we brought in. Yeah. It's been a great addition. So we have a lot of great offensive linemen, and I think Brett Veach has done a great job of putting competition in that room as well.
Well said. You know, you fix your offensive line, and all of a sudden you're starting with two rookies on the offensive line going, oh, my God, is this going to work out? What did it work out?
Oh, it worked out, and I think they're rookies, but at the same time, they're guys that played a lot of snaps in college football, and they were developed the right way, and they came in with the mindset of they're going to go out there and handle their own. And if another year of that, I'm excited for it.
Well, Garrett Christian's name was mentioned there. We heard earlier Sam McDowell say, hey, he's been working with the ones over at right tackle. He could be the guy that maybe pushes Andrew Wiley down on the depth charts that's there. And if he does it, he'll have to beat him out to get it done. But that jumped out at me on that front. But then, you know, he's built like a refrigerator.
That's pretty good.
He is a square. Yeah. Like, he is just this block. Even his head is like a square. Like, his head looks menacing. Like you know, it's just a big head to get around. And then there's this giant body behind this big head. Like, he is, I mean, yeah. The Chiefs have an ankle, you know, knock on wood, that he's healthy. But that spot is done. And when he, after 3 years, put a contract extension in front of him, that, you know, starts after, you know, five, six years after that fourth year, and you're set. I mean, this is a guy that's going to hold that spot, like I said, barring injury, for like a decade. And that's a great thing to get. And remember when people said, you know, there were a few people that were kind of disappointed that they went with Creed Humphrey. There are other people that said, well, I would have taken Creed Humphrey where they took Bolton. There were people that were disappointed in Bolton. Both those guys panned out fantastic. And we talk all the time about trading down. They had no first-round pick that year, right? Orlando Brown was the first-round pick, and they got the extra second back from Baltimore. That has worked out fantastically. And it, I hope, is the mindset, when particularly, you know, Mike Sando's piece about how seldom picks 25 through 32 get offered the fifth year. Like, that should be the strategy every year. As soon as you can trade down. Trade out. And even if you take, you know, a discount on it, like, you don't need to be paying the extra money, because those guys historically are no better than the guys you're getting in the second round. Creed Humphrey and Nick Bolton both went at the end of the second round.
Yeah. I mean, it's paving the way to potential, one, we think, an all-pro, but certainly a Pro Bowler, and a guy who's maybe not cycling towards all-pro, but as been taking leaps from last year to this year, and I think is ready to be one of the better linebackers in the league for a decade.
I think he's headed towards All-Pro and on a regular basis. All right, we'll talk more about Creed Humphrey and how well he graded. Amelia Probst from Pro Football Focus has broken down the offensive lineman and Creed Humphrey, one of the highest-rated ones in the breakdown. We'll talk about that next here in the program. Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. We talk football. Why wouldn't we? Chiefs training camp, of course, firing away. And what everybody wants to know is how are the Kansas City Chiefs going to do? Well, one of the ways you can tell is by the performance of the offensive line. Here to talk about it, data scientist from Pro Football Focus, Amelia Probst, is with us, has done a great piece about the offensive line. If you can't protect your quarterback, you can't win in the NFL. We know that's true. Amelia's appearance here is brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. Did you know that you can walk in? That's right, walk in right now, as a matter of fact. 435 and all, the walk-in clinic is there, whether it's a break, a sprain. 5 years and up, ages 5 and up, University of Kansas Health System has a walk-in clinic with orthopedics that service the Chiefs, the Royals, all the best athletes in town right there, and it's available to you via the walk-in clinic. No appointment necessary. Get the answers you need right now in just minutes at the University of Kansas Health System at 435 and all. Let's welcome Amelia Probst into the program. Amelia, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and I love the piece that you've written. People can find it at pff.com. I think everybody knows by now. I'm a big fan of Pro Football Focus, a big fan of the subscription. If you're a football fan, you really want to understand the game, it's a great place to start, and I love anyone who will take the time to write about the offensive linemen. And you basically are attacking this as who has no weakness? How would you describe maybe the inspiration for what this was, what this piece was about, what you were trying to glean from doing this?
Sure. So the way I saw it was offensive line have to be very, very consistent in the way that they play. So whether that's blocking, footwork, whatever that may be. So the more consistent alignment can be, the more valuable they'll most likely be to a team. Obviously, that could go the other way too. Maybe they're consistently performing poorly, but hopefully that's not the case. But yeah, the way I saw it was that the offensive lineman can kind of determine the outcome of a game, whether they're good or bad consistently. And like I said in the article, it's all the teams that made the playoffs in 2021 had a top 15 offensive line based on PFF grade. So it kind of shows you that you have to have a pretty solid offensive line to make it far into the season.
Yeah, and let's start with Trent Williams, because one of the things we do whenever we're looking things up, our little junior scientific studies, right? We certainly don't have the depth of knowledge or mathematical backgrounds that you folks all do at PFF, but we always kind of go into it with an expectation and we see, okay, do the numbers back that up or not? It's kind of sometimes it just is a security blanket. Hey, yeah, Trent Williams graded high. That makes me feel good that I see Trent Williams grading high. We'll get to Creed Humphrey, who's the big name on this one, I think, here in a second, but did it go the way you thought it would go? When you set out on this, did you find that the industry's view of what are the top offensive linemen ended up holding up? It certainly did with Trent Williams. Or did you find some guys are overrated or living on reputation and it may be told a different story than what the public perception is?
I think for the most part, it held up. Obviously, you can see, like, obviously Trent Williams and J.C. Treader and Jason Kelce, like some of the top names there, really, like, held up using this metric. And obviously, it's not perfect, of course, like any metric. Obviously, sample size has something to do with it. But I think this is a pretty good start, and it definitely has some work to do as well. And I think that's what I hope to do in the future, is maybe look at more even a granular basis. So look at a player on down by down or other, like, other ways that we could go about it to look to see if it really holds up once you dig more deeply into that. And I think obviously it depends how a lineman fits into a team's scheme as well, which was not taken into account in the model that I used. But like I said, there's always some improvement to be done. So hopefully that's something I can work on in the future.
All right. And when you look at the chart, right, the first one that has volatility on the left and block success rate going across the bottom. So your premium spot you want to be is in the upper right corner. That's going to be your best of the best, right? That's low volatility. In other words, consistency. And then also blocking well, right? That's the ideal spot, is to be in the upper right corner. Where you don't want to be is in the lower left corner, and that's low success and a volatility of it. The volatility part, what constitutes volatility? Is it just missing the block or having a really good game and having a bad game? Like, how do you define being a volatile blocker?
Yeah, so the way that I measure volatility is basically how a player distributes their overall season performance on a game-by-game basis. So how consistent were they were game-to-game throughout the season. And I did exclude certain games where, you know, players were hurt or they didn't play in more than, like, you know, 10 snaps or whatever it may be. So it's not the same thing as, like, streakiness or variance, because those are more of a clustering of, like, good and bad performances over the course of the season. But volatility is more bound by a period of time. So it's a little more accurate in that sense.
So the name that will jump out at Chiefs fans right away is Creed Humphrey, who is as far north as you can get on the chart and the second furthest to the right, which makes him second best block rate, best as far as volatility. Were you shocked that he graded out that high?
I can't say I was too shocked. I would say, since he doesn't allow many pressures and he was the top pass blocking center, that wasn't too surprising. And I mentioned this before, but since there's only one season of data on him, obviously it's limited sample size. So I'd have to see how he does this season to really, like, to be able to compare. But overall, I think I'm pretty happy with it, given that he was the fourth best offensive lineman according to PFF, like, offensive grades. So I think it lines up pretty well.
Would you say he was robbed in not getting a Pro Bowl? Is that fair to say?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Good. Good. As long as we can establish the ground rules. All right. The opposite end of the spectrum on that chart is Andrew Wiley. And I don't think this will shock Chiefs fans. I think everybody felt really good left tackle to right guard, or at least they felt great guard to guard, which we'll get to that part. You know, the two guards here in a second. They felt like they were pretty solid over at left tackle. The PFF data 28th is where, Orlando Brown ranked when it came to all the tackles. If you were to ask Chiefs fan who was going to be the lowest graded on this, they would have said Andrew Wiley, and Andrew Wiley's name jumps off the page. He's not the worst, right? But for a guy that wasn't plan A, how bad a performance was Andrew Wiley's when you stack it up against everybody else? I mean, plan A was Lucas Niang. He was forced into duty as, you know, as a swing guy. Did he actually end up okay for what you're paying for? You got pretty good return.
Yeah, I would say so. I think there's always room for improvement as well. So hopefully that's what happens in his case. And I think another thing that I found in my work is that teams would rather pay for a very good offensive lineman who regresses to the average rather than someone who is below average, just because they don't want to take the chance that they perform even worse, I guess, if that makes sense. So I think, again, there's always room for improvement. And yeah, I think he has a limited sample size similar to Creed Humphrey. So I would say that maybe he could improve in the next few seasons. Hopefully he gets.
All right, now there's a dot for all the offensive linemen that qualify. That's a minimum of 150 plays. But there's obviously not room for every name. So they're just kind of the outliers are named around the graph. How did the other three Chiefs offensive linemen do? Orlando Brown, Joe Tooney, Trent Smith. Where do they fit on this graph if you've got that data available?
Yeah, so Orlando Brown had a volatility of around 0.2, and then he was a little below 50% on his block success rate. So he'd probably be somewhere around the exact middle, pretty much, maybe a little above and to the left. And then Joe Tooney, he had a volatility of about 0.146, and then a block success rate of about 0.65. So he'd probably be somewhere in the cluster to the top right as well.
Okay.
And then Smith would be probably close to the middle again as well.
So Orlando Brown, right? That's the big one. It looks like he's kind of in the top right corner of the bottom left square. So again, if you're not visualizing this, that's hard to understand. You want to be in the top right. Right, like that's the place that you want to be. That's the best spot because you have low volatility and you have high success rate. He's right around the middle, which makes him basically average. Right, he's an average player.
Yeah.
So what do you pay an average player? Because the Chiefs are paying him $16.7 million. They refused what some reports have were contracts that were going to be Trent Williams-esque. Although there are reports, and I was told that the total guaranteed dollars were going to be higher than what Trent Williams got. Now he is 25, where Trent Williams signed that deal at 31 or 32 years old. But what does that make a guy like Orlando Brown worth? Like, does, when you hear $16.7 million on a franchise tag, is that what he's worth? Is he worth, you know, the Chiefs were averaging, you know, were offering what was said to be about $18 million per. Does that sound like he's what he's worth? What do these numbers tell you about what the Chiefs or anybody else ought to pay Orlando Brown?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think something that I mentioned in my article as well is that teams like consistency. And even if someone is average, if they're consistent and they can continue to be average, I think teams would prefer that. And maybe we'll sign players to longer or more lucrative deals. So that could really be the difference between him making $16 million a year versus more. So I think it really depends. I think they would prefer to have an average player, and that might sound surprising, but as we know, in this offseason, with like all the wide receiver contracts and everything, they kind of have to pay players what they're worth. And if players are signing for more and more money, they're going to demand more and more money. So I think in the end, like, salaries are determined by performance and what other players in their position have received in their contracts. So it's kind of a little bit of a back and forth between the agents and players and the teams. So I think, for at least based on my results, I think it seems to be a decent deal for now. I'm sure he would hope for more, but I think if he could improve, he could get a little bit more money there.
And to his credit, he came back in plenty of time to be in football shape, to go through, you know, all but five or six days of training camp. So he's taking it serious. And to me, I said, listen, the guy's betting on himself. Now he's got to prove it. He's got to go out and make it happen. Sure. And he's at least going through training camp. He came in pretty good shape. So that's a good start. But he's light years away from Trent Williams, right? Like, I understand inflation, mm-hmm. right, in society as well as the NFL, that the cap is always going up. And, you know, we see now quarterbacks making more than Patrick Mahomes. That's the natural order of things. But I look at it and I laugh at the Arizona Cardinals. They're never winning a championship with Kyler Murray. You can't put that much money into a quarterback that's, I don't know, I'm going to guess 60, 70% of what Patrick Mahomes is. How much can you overpay along the offensive line, or should you overpay along the offensive line? Or is it, as you said, to know he's consistent, which he's kind of right in the middle. He's, you know, kind of just like a average tackle. Is it worth overpaying for that because you've got cheap center, guard, right tackle right now? Does that say that, okay, to keep the continuity, no, this contract in and of itself, by itself, is not worth it? Because I think Eric Eager has said his value is about $13 million, according to their data. In and of itself is not worth it, but when you've got the cheaper players to have the continuity and the consistency, to not have to move a Joe Tooney over to left tackle, which seems like most people's best option, then this is worth it to go ahead and overpay Orlando Brown, at least the way the team is constructed right now?
That's a great question. I would say, in my opinion, like, offensive linemen are probably one of the most, like, undervalued positions in football, even though their performance is, like, very integral to the result of a game. So, kind of like I said before, I think it would be worth it for, maybe not for him to overpay, but pay them a little more than they would like to get maybe an average or above average offensive lineman rather than below average offensive lineman. Like, you can really see how that affects the outcomes of games and the run game and basically everything in the offense. So, yeah, I think I would say it's worth it to pay a little bit more.
We're talking to Amelia Probst. She is the data scientist, one of the data scientists at ProFootballFocus.com. You can see her work at PFF.com. The article that we're referencing, if you want to just Google search it, Using Volatility to Evaluate NFL Offensive Linemen. If you're catching us late, the star of the show is Creed Humphrey. He's up there even beyond Trent Williams as far as his lack of volatility and his success rate on his blocking. We're talking about the Chiefs overall. The line as a whole, when you put all these numbers together, what's your expectation for how good this offensive line should be in 22?
That's a good question as well. I think because last year, Tooney and Elgay were in the top three offensive linemen in pass block grades, and they have a bunch of starters returning and there aren't many injury concerns. I think relative to teams like the Bills, who have some injury concerns so far, at least with the offensive line and the Bucks as well, I think they're in a pretty good spot relative to other teams that are favored to make it to the playoffs. So I would say probably definitely top 10. I'd have to look at what PFF said in their articles, but in 2021, at least, they were the ninth best offensive line. So I don't see that changing very much, given that there's a lot of the stars are returning and yeah, that they did pretty well last year.
You mentioned, and we'll stretch beyond this article, you mentioned the importance of the offensive line. We know the big story is that they lost Tyreek Hill. What should the expectation be for this Chiefs offense? The O-line's back. Patrick Mahomes is back. They've added other veteran receivers. What's your expectation for the offense? Should this still be a top five offense? Should it be battling for the number one offense, or does Tyreek Hill set them a long way back?
I definitely think we'll have to adjust to playing without Tyreek Hill, and we know that Mahomes struggled a little bit last season with the too high safety look. So I'm hoping that he'll improve a little bit this season regarding that, and I've heard that he has a little bit. But even though he struggled, like he still passed for over 4,800 yards and had 37 touchdowns, and did pretty well, obviously. But he did have the lowest PFF grade of his career. But I think if they can figure out how to kind of aggregate MVS and Juju and Sky Moore, and not necessarily replace Tyreek Hill, because you can't replace him, but I think if they can learn how to kind of split the time between those receivers, I think they'll do pretty well. I'm a Bills fan, so I'm hoping we will have a repeat of the Bills Chiefs game last year. But besides that, I think we'll do pretty good.
Yeah, repeat as long as the ending's the same, right?
Yeah.
What can you get done in 13 seconds, Amelia?
Not very much, to be honest.
maybe not engineering a game-tying field goal, which was, we sat saying 13 seconds for a long time. It's we're frustrated because it didn't go on to mean a Super Bowl championship. It would have everywhere would have been T-shirts, 13 seconds. I mean, we thought that was going to be the prelude to a championship, right? And we were going to remember that forever. And now it's kind of faded a little bit. I don't know how many people outside of Kansas City and Buffalo will remember that, because the Chiefs didn't go on and win the championship. But it was an incredible game. And do you think the Bills, I mean, since you're a Bills fan and you know the math, do you think that they should be the favorite to win the Super Bowl this year?
I never want to jinx anything. My main concern right now with the Bills is just the health of their offensive line. Even though they did add Roger Saffold and obviously like Von Miller and some great players as well. But like I said, offensive line is kind of the backbone of the offense. So if they can't figure that out, I'm not sure. I never want to say one way or the other if they'll win the Super Bowl or not. But I know like McKenzie and like James Cook and a few of the other players have been looking good in camp. So I'm hopeful. I'll leave it at that.
How can a data scientist talk about jinxes? It's all in the math.
there's always a little bit of uncertainty. No matter what the math says, you're never 100%. So while I'm confident in the Bills and Josh Allen and Sean McDermott, you just never know. It doesn't always go the way the math says.
All right, we're talking to Amelia Probst, the data scientist from Pro Football Focus. You can see her great work at PFF.com. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Chiefs. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine or walk right in to the location there at I-435 and Nall, 435 and Nall, just diagonal to the Top Golf. That's where you can find them, and you can walk right in. A buddy of mine found out about his wife's fractured foot in about 30 minutes. It's that simple. Go right now to 435 and Nall. Amelia, four quickies. I'll start you with this one. Patrick Mahomes' numbers this year, yards, touchdowns, interceptions. What are you feeling he puts up this year?
I'd say he'd probably do something similar to last year. So probably over 4,000 yards. I think he had 37 touchdowns. So maybe a little fewer than that without Tyreek Hill. So maybe 30. And he had 13 interceptions. So I don't see him changing that much either. So I would say maybe around 10 interceptions. I think he'll do better with his PFF grade this year, since he had his lowest PFF grade of his career. But yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. I think he'll have to adjust to having new receivers, but I think like MDS and Hardman are definitely available for the deep passes, and Juju is more ideal for the slot. So I don't know. I think it'll be a good season for him.
Okay. All right. The AFC West champion will be who?
Oof. I'll have to go with the Chiefs on this one.
Okay.
I don't think Wilson will bring that much to the Broncos. I don't believe that much to Justin Herbert. And I mean, Devontae Adams will be great for the Raiders, but I don't know if they could pull it off.
All right. You're feeling what record for the Chiefs this year?
Ooh. I'll go 12-5.
12-5. Okay. That's solid, solid number. No, no hatred there. Your Super Bowl pick is who? Who beats who in the Super Bowl?
I'm going to say Bills in the Super Bowl this year.
Okay. Bills over?
I'll go with the Packers.
Packers.
And Aaron Rodgers. Go yeah. for one more.
That'd be great to see Aaron Rodgers answer goofy questions all throughout Super Bowl week. That would be a joy for those of us that cover the Super Bowl. Amelia, great stuff. We appreciate it. I really enjoyed the article. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That is Amelia Probst, data scientist. Our friends at the University of Kansas Health System, located right there at their Indian Creek campus. Did you know you can walk right in, get the orthopedic answers you need? It's at 10730 10730 Nall Avenue in Overland Park. That's I-435 and Nall. You can walk right in diagonally from the Topgolf and find out between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, whether it's a bone fracture, dislocation, joint injury, sprain, strains, get the answers you need quickly. Same experts that care for the Chiefs, Royals, University of Kansas athletes, and, of course, high school and middle athletes all over the area. It's the University of Kansas Health System. See him today at 435 and all.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Jazz into the hour answer. Chris Jones has played in 12 postseason games among defensive players. All NFL, who holds the record for postseason games played?
Great question. You have to be somebody who played for a long time and played on a really good team. You know, probably a Dolphin, maybe. I'm thinking. Is there a Bo Camper or?
Nope.
Do we have? What am I missing here?
Longtime Dallas Cowboy, who were in the playoffs seemingly every year from the mid '60s to the early '80s. Linebacker D.D. Lewis played in 27 postseason games. By the way, that's only 20 short of Tom Brady's NFL record of 47.
Yeah, harder as a defensive player. When you lose your athleticism, you can't, you know, keep playing the way Tom could. That's great. That's a lot of playoff games, particularly back in the day when they didn't have as many rounds or as many wild cards either. The fact that it still holds out from that long ago. Great Cajun food from Jazz, what we were playing for. Three great locations to get that great Cajun food. Live music, it's playing tonight at Jazz. How do I know? Doors are open. Hence, great live music with the best Cajun food. Made from scratch menu. You can check it out in KCK. It's the Legends. 39th and State Line down by the University of Kansas Health System. And in Independence, I-70 and 291. Check them out. Great Cajun food. You can see the whole menu at jazzkitchen.com. We were talking about the Matthews and how much football they had played earlier today. We said we would dig in and look it up. How many total games did we find that the Matthews family had played when it was all said and done?
Well, Father Clay Sr., sons Bruce and Clay Jr., Bruce's son Jake, and his nephews Clay III, Casey, and Troy Nicholas combined 1,008.
That is a lot of football games, to say the least. 1,008 for the Matthews family. Wow, that's impressive. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks for joining us here today. We're back at it tomorrow at 2:00.